It's the second hour of the 92 Noon Show on Highland Radio. Just a few notes before we go for the bingo numbers and then our Community Garda information slot. There's a diesel spill at Banalecki near Rafoe toward Letterkenny. You can even smell it, our caller says. Please be careful. And also, caller says, I'm at the Optum roundabout. It's a little bit slippy. I think there may be some oil spilled. Please do watch out. There's two notices of potential oil spillages. One at Banalecki near Rafoe. That's quite close to where the Ballyholy Farm turnoff is, I think. And also the Optum roundabout where it's a bit slippy as well. I think there may be some oil spilt. Sorry, Banalecki is the crossroads further out. Now, under the Treaty of Amsterdam, Ireland along with Denmark have an opt-out from EU immigration obligations. Only a referendum will give the mandate to create a paradigm shift in our mass immigration policy. Another caller says Ireland is obliged to do a lot of things under international law, which they fail to do, such as uphold the rights of the disabled and the sick. Another caller says the new measures for Ukrainians are just soundbites to appease voters with an election looming. As a person who works in the Department of Social Protection, I can categorically state that a photocopy of a passport is acceptable for asylum seekers to obtain a PPSN. No checks are done to verify it, either with the relevant authority or with Interpol. 80% of asylum seekers never enter the employment market, sometimes through no fault of their own. An Irish or EU citizen, by comparison, must provide valid identification and meet the relevant qualifying criteria in order to avail of social protection services. This does not apply to Ukrainians. Until recently, Ukrainians were allowed to return to Ukraine for 4 weeks on holiday. Irish citizens are allowed a two-week holiday on job seekers. Added to this, the department inspectors nationwide are dealing with a high volume of duplicate claims under multiple PPSN numbers involving a number of people. There is the HAP discrepancy. A family of two adults and three children gets €550 a month. More money goes to Ukrainians irrespective of the size of the family. And finally, there's the homeless issue. 14,000 homeless, not a single modular home built for them. Ukrainians are having modular homes built for them in Sligo, also in Dublin and Cork. Perhaps Owen might give his view on the fact that no modular housing has been built for Irish homeless. That's from a caller. Next comment. Gardaí need to stop ignoring footpath parking. Same cars every day on the busy Glencar paths. Very tricky for those buggies and for those with mobility issues. And finally, we're delighted to be launching the Three Marys CD at the Mahari Community Centre in Dunloe at 11:30. Everyone is very welcome. There'll be tea, fresh scones and plenty of tasty bites. So the Three Marys CD is being officially launched today, and that's happening at the Mahari Community Centre in Dunloe. And that's one that's well worth supporting.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 9126025.
It's time for the Community Garda slot here on Highland Radio. Delighted to welcome Garda Niall Maguire into studio. Niall, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Donald.
A lot to get through, and sad to report quite a lot of burglaries and thefts this week.
Yeah, Donegal got hit very badly this weekend with crime, Donal. In particular, the Inishowen area had a lot of burglaries. And I heard your earlier caller in relation to Catherine was on about the quads that were stolen. And I'll reiterate that appeal that the information we have in relation to them stolen quads. But yeah, if we could start off, there was also another one in Meeting House Street, Rafoe, between 10 p.m. on Saturday the 9th. Until Sunday the 10th of December, entry was gained to a boiler house at the property through an unlocked door, and an oil boiler and burner were stolen. So quite an expensive item stolen from that premises, Donal. And if anybody's seen anything or can give us any information in relation to a burglary at Meeting House Street, Rafoe, between 10 p.m. on Saturday the 9th and Sunday morning the 10th, please contact my colleagues in Letterkenny on 074-9167-100. Now, the Moville and Greencastle area did get badly hit on Sunday night, Monday morning, and there was multiple burglaries, and I just want to go through them, Donal, if I could.
Yeah.
The first one was at a domestic house in the area of Mean Letter Bale, Lakemy, hopefully I'm saying that properly, Moville, between midnight and 3 a.m. And it appears that most of these burglars were around that time, Donal, between midnight and 3 a.m. on Monday the 11th of December. It's believed entry was gained to this particular house through an unlocked rear door, and a sum of cash was stolen alongside a DeWalt angle grinder and a DeWalt drill, which were also stolen from the property. subsequently, Greg, St. Columba's church was burglarised in Ballinacrae, Moville, around the same time, Donald, between midnight and 3:25 a.m. My colleagues were en route to the previous burglary in the house when they observed that the lights were on in the church, and they knew that this was suspicious, and they went in to investigate. And they, when they got closer, they heard the alarm was ringing, and the front door of the church had been forced open, as had the sacristy door. The sacristy had been ransacked, and damage had been caused to a tabernacle. Another couple of rooms within the church building were also ransacked after entry had been forced. Nothing is believed to have been stolen at this stage, but substantial damage was caused. A very unfortunate occurrence there, Donald.
Yeah, and then the golf club locally as well.
Yeah, next then was the golf club. I'm guessing it'll be around the same time, but the last time someone was there and seen it was secured was Sunday night at 7 p.m. and then it was discovered at 8:30 a.m. on Monday. Entry was gained by forcing a rear window, and a number of doors were forced inside the building also. Rooms were ransacked, and a sum of cash was stolen from a cash register, and also a charity box from within the building was taken. A burglary then occurred in the Greencastle area between 2:20 a.m. and 5:30 a.m. A purse was stolen from an unlocked car. The property had an unlocked shed, and it was entered, and a red and black Makita fuel pump was stolen from within. And then another attempted theft occurred at a property in the area of Carrollhugh Greencastle between 4 a.m. and 6:30 a.m. Two unlocked cars were entered and ransacked at the property, but fortunately there was nothing of value within them, so there was nothing reported stolen there. So if anybody can help us in relation to this spate of burglaries and damage, or if they involved and observed anything suspicious, any activity or vehicles in the Moville Greencastle area in the early hours of Monday morning, please contact my colleagues in Buncrana on 074 93 20 540, or the Garda confidential line as usual is 1-800-666-111. So anybody that may have dash cam have been in the Moville Greencastle area between midnight and 7 a.m. on Monday the 11th of December, please make that available to my colleagues, Donald. Indeed, contact any Garda station and we'll put you in touch with the investigating detectives.
It does beg the question, are any of these linked? Because, I mean, in certain cases, the modus operandi is very different. But, you know, I'm sure there must be some sort of suspicion that there, at least some of them will be linked, that the same people could be responsible for more than one.
Oh, absolutely, Greg. It's for sure they're linked, you know. Because it's the same brutal method of entry in each of these burglaries, and it's come in this spate.
Yeah.
You know, any showing can go without burglaries for quite a while, and then when they happen together, it's generally the one person or the one gang that's doing it, you know.
So, I mean, it could well be that if two people notice something different at different times, you know, it could get a link to the same vehicle. I mean, information could prove absolutely crucial in this case.
For sure, Donald, yeah. And the way that these are typically solved is somebody noticing something suspicious and tipping the guards off, you know, because my colleagues are out and about there, and, you know, once they're maybe moving to the report of one burglary, you know, they don't have the blinkers on going to that burglary. They're looking out because they realise by the time they get there that these offenders are likely gone. So any information in relation to suspicious vehicles, you know, just a quick phone call. If it comes to nothing, it comes to nothing, fine. But, you know, we appreciate the phone call, and that is historically how we solve these burglaries. Mm-hmm.
And as we say, that information coming from dash cam or just from the observations of people can prove absolutely crucial. Let's refresh our memories on that incident in Ballybug and Ballantra that we already referred to earlier in the show.
Yeah, I heard Catherine on earlier, and I'm very sorry. I heard her demeanour, and she's very upset about it, rightly so. It's a terrible thing and a terrible loss for that business at this time of year. So this occurred, as Catherine said, between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. on Monday the 11th of December at Ballybulgan, Ballyshannon. This is the premises that sells quad bikes. The doors to her lock shed were broken open, forced open, and three new Suzuki King quads were stolen from within. These aren't like kids' quads, you know. Suzuki does a lot of kids' quads, but these were kind of big quads. One of them was a 750, and two of them were 500s. The two 500s are red in colour and are both non-power steering. One of these two has oversized Kenda bear claw tyres on the back. The third quad, the 750, is green in colour and has a black bull bar fitted to the front. Again, anybody that can help us and help Kath in relation to this, please contact my colleagues in Ballyshannon on 071 985 8530.
And the next one we do, and Catherine alluded to this, we do believe the next one is linked, because this very well may be the trailer that moved the quads away from the area. This is in the same area.
For sure, just across the road, Donald, Blue Falcon 14 by 6 foot galvanised cattle trailer was taken from a farmyard in the area of Lac Lum, Ballantra, between the hours of 4:30 a.m. and 5:15 a.m. on Monday the 11th of December. Two males are believed to have entered the farmyard and they wheeled the trailer out onto the road to be towed away. So in all likelihood, this was the trailer that was used to take the three stolen quads away. So obviously my colleagues are following a definite line of inquiry in relation to the linking these two crimes. But if anybody can help us, or has particularly dash cam in the Ballyshannon, Ballantra area between 4:30 a.m. and 5 a.m, please maybe make it available to my colleagues in Ballyshannon who are investigating.
Now, moving on to the area of advice, and we heard a piece there from Donna Marie based on advice that has been given by Gardaí this week, and no harm to repeat it again, in terms of protecting your home against burglary, particularly in the winter months.
Yeah, at times it feels like, Donal, I suppose there's very little we can do in relation to some of these burglaries, but you know, we need to mitigate our risk as much as possible. And quite a few of them appeals I mentioned, Donal, there was unlocked vehicles and unlocked doors. So the first thing is lock your vehicles and lock your doors. Turn on some lights in your house, you know, timer switches, stuff like that, LED bulbs, we all know about that. They're not expensive to run. A house alarm, we highly recommend a house alarm, and particularly monitored if possible. A monitored alarm, Donal, is one that when it's triggered, the monitoring company are aware of it and they contact the keyholder by phone, and if they can't get the keyholder, then they contact us and we will respond and attend that house or business premises that has a verified alarm. Store your keys away from windows. We've had keys that have been fished out of letterboxes before, you know, with sticks and things, and, you know, keys for vehicles, because most modern vehicles now have immobilizers and they're not that easy to steal. You actually need the keys. Don't keep large amounts of cash or jewellery in the house, and if you have to do so for whatever reason, have them in a hidden, concealed lock safe that's secured. And you'll get great advice from any of the locksmiths or safe suppliers in the town here in Letterkenny, Greg, or throughout Donegal.
And the other one that was mentioned, obviously, was in terms of if you're going away for Christmas, as many people do, don't be proclaiming all over social media that you can't wait for your family holiday.
For sure. We've had instances, I'm not sure how common it is, but it's certainly been in the past where we've had confirmation that people have been targeted because they've been broadcasting that, yeah, we're going away for, you know, 2 weeks or whatever, and, you know, it's quite obvious then that the house is going to be empty. Another one that we come across quite often, Donal, is, you know, because we're policing the roads network and these criminals have to be on the road to get from A to B from each of their victims, they tend not to travel with a lot of the implements with them, because there is no fence there for having implements to break into a house. So what happens in a lot of the time is they actually use the householder's own tools to break into their house. So have your garden shed locked as well, because if you have hammers and ladders and crowbars and things like that, you know, that's what they're using to break into homes. Don't store cash or any valuables in your car, be it locked or unlocked, Greg. And also always contact Gardaí immediately. If you observe any sort of suspicious activity in your area, take note of registration numbers, if at all possible, even partial registration numbers, description of the person involved, and very important is the direction of travel. Like I said, my colleagues, once they respond to a call, it would be nice to have at least a direction of travel when there is somebody maybe has committed a crime or is suspicious. Look out for your neighbours, particularly those who are elderly and vulnerable.
And all good advice, and please do bear that in mind. Important all year round, but particularly important now, because there can be an increase with the darker nights and so on. There can definitely be an increase in burglaries, and certainly judging by this week's sheets, I mean, you know, there's a lot more burglaries on this week than we might have had, say, during a week in June or July.
For sure, Donald, yeah, and it's it's unfortunate now, but it seems like the ones in Inishowen are certainly linked. I'm not linking the one in Ballantra aside from the trailer and the quad, but it's you know, one person that's determined to commit burglaries, or a couple of lads that are working together, they can create a lot of devastation, as is quite obvious from this week, Donal.
Now, a couple of questions that came in from last week, and the first is, what time do pubs close at the weekend?
Yes, pubs, the trading hours of licensed premises between Monday to Thursday are 10:30 in the morning to 11:30 p.m. People might be familiar with that when they head onto the supermarket and stuff, and they can't buy their bottle of wine and stuff before 10:30 in the morning. Friday and Saturday is generally 10:30 to 12:30 in the morning, but that the certain premises then can apply for exemptions to extend that out then to up to 2:30 a.m. And then Sunday is 12:30 p.m. to 11:00 p.m.
And they are the legal hours. Do Gardaí stop walkers, cyclists and runners in dark clothing and give them high-vis vests?
If we have them, Donald, we do. You're not a cyclist and a pedestrian. They're not committing an offence by not wearing high visibility clothes. They're not, you know, they're not legally obliged to, but obviously it's recommended for their own safety. Cyclists are obliged by law to ensure that they are visible using reflectors and lights under the road traffic regulations. Sometimes if we do have high visibility armbands or vests, we do give them out to pedestrians. There is a supply in Letterkenny if anybody wants to call in, particularly this dark time of year. Gráinne or one of the guards on the front desk, if you ask them nicely, I'm sure if they have one, they'll give it to you. But, you know, I suppose it's not ultimately our responsibility to give people high vis. You know, you can buy these online or in the sports shop, Donald.
Yeah, I know Sergeant Charlene Anderson did say last week on the show that they do have, well, they did have a supply in Letterkenny at that point, whether or not they're still there, and I'm sure other guard stations.
Yeah, I think it's the Road Safety Authority that supplies us, Donal, you know.
Yeah, so it would be, yeah.
If there's any groups or anything out there that are looking maybe for more than a couple, I'd say if you emailed the Road Safety Authority, they'll probably send you a few, you know.
Yeah. Well, Garth and McGuire, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Donald.
All that's the Garda slot. It'll be up on our social media, and it'll be up on the Garda Facebook page as well a little bit after the show finishes. But for now, Niall McGuire, Garda, thank you very much indeed. And don't forget, by the way, we also have the Grand Day giveaway from now until the 22nd, when that car will be given away. If you have entered that draw and you have a ticket for the car, you will also be entered in a draw for €1,000 every day between now and then. And here's how it works. Every day, a call will be made to one lucky listener. The phone will ring. If the call goes unanswered, the prize doesn't disappear. It just rolls over to the next day and the next and the next. So what will happen is, on one of the programmes on the station this afternoon, a call will be made. And if you answer within the set time while the phone is ringing, you then will be asked a very straightforward question and you will win €1,000. If you haven't yet got a ticket, you can do so now. You can do so online at highlandradio.com, or indeed the lines are open 074-91-25000. You can call and our team will take the call, and you can buy your ticket online as well. So 074-91-25000, you can ring and you can get your ticket, or you can book it, as we say, online. That call will be made at some stage today and every day until the 22nd. And on the 22nd, Greg will be calling someone and giving away a new Skoda Kamiq. Now, I want to move on to something completely different. We're going to Zoom. And I remember way back in the midst of time, on my mother's birthday one morning many, many years ago, Gay Byrne read a request on the radio. And it was one of those amazing things, because when Gay Byrne read your request, that was something big. And when Gay Byrne read your letter on air, that was something really important. And it was a key part of very, very many households that the Gay Byrne show on radio. And we all know Gay, obviously, from the Late Late Show. But the radio show was a hugely popular show, and a hugely important show as well, because it was probably the linchpin of national broadcasting on a day-to-day basis. Gay Byrne in the morning, and I can still hear that tune humming in my head. I'm well old enough to remember listening to that show regularly, and my parents being glued to the radio while it was on. And a collection of the letters that were sent in to the Gay Byrne show has been collated and brought together and published. And who better to collate those letters than Gay's daughter, Susie Byrne. So I'd like to say Susie joins us on Zoom this morning. Susie, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. Lovely to be here and there.
It's our pleasure. Susie, it must have been of great interest to you to actually sit down and sift through the letters because, I mean, I don't know how many letters you had to sift through in order to compile the book, but I'm sure it must have been well into the thousands, if not the tens of thousands.
It was thousands. Very overwhelming and a much bigger group of letters than I thought existed even within the archives. And the archives are filed on a daily basis. All of the programme files for each day are filed. So you're sifting through programme files of the actual running order of the day as well as and then finding letters within each day, which ended up, because of the way things are filed, it ended up being a bigger task. It also gave a much better understanding of the way the programme worked and the way that the light and shade and the gear change within the programme, although there were some very, very harrowing letters, they were also able to switch to lighter stuff as well. So during each programme, it would move from one to the other, but there was thousands and thousands of letters and all handwritten, obviously, so they had to be deciphered as well as read.
And sometimes we forget that it was groundbreaking to an extent that we wouldn't appreciate now, in that people were raising issues in letters to the Gay Byrne Show on radio that would not be discussed anywhere else. And in many ways, he was an absolute pioneer in terms of issues that he would have brought to light on radio, because I'm sure there were many, many issues of abuse, issues of, very sensitive nature that maybe are discussed an awful lot more openly now. But back in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, that was not the case.
Absolutely not. And the letters, when you're reading the letters, you really feel that the person who's writing, although they're writing to a national radio programme, they are writing to him specifically and they're trusting him with, as you said, stuff that they would never have said before. And I don't know whether they even maybe spoke about it afterwards to their families, because a lot of the letters were, although they weren't anonymous, they did say, please do not read my name out on air for various reasons or for obvious reasons. So, and they were pouring from the heart and taking huge risks, because, I mean, they would say often, I have five children, I live here in Mayo or I live somewhere, and they could kind of be identifiable just by their, and they, in fairness to the programme, where there was specific information that might have identified somebody within their letter, that would have been left out, so that they really, if they did not want their name or their person to be known, it wasn't. But absolutely, it was all very groundbreaking, and you felt that people were just in their kitchens and they just sat down there and then, having heard something else maybe, to write their story. And it flowed from that. It was usually one letter or one comment which just opened the floodgates, and they would come down the letters in their droves. It was incredible.
And it's noticeable, I'm sure, that very few of the letters, I suspect, are addressed to Mr. Byrne. They're all addressed, Dear Gay. And that's telling, because Gay, yes, they saw him as, be it a big brother, be it a father figure, but they saw him as a friend. He had that, and it was fairly unique at the time that, you know, he was very much Gay. He was, he's our mate, he's our brother, he's the one we trust. And the level of trust Gay held was probably, if you had done the sort of, you see many, many transparency surveys published these days where how much do people trust A, B, C, D and E. I suspect if you had done a trust survey in the 1980s, Gay Byrne would be about ahead with about five times more votes than anybody else in terms of a trust competition. I mean, they trusted, yes, him implicitly.
They trusted him, and I think they, you know, you get the feeling from the letters and from listening to a lot of audio that I did, that they trusted him because he got to their level and he believed them. And a lot of them were telling stories that were kind of unbelievable at the time and would have been going against the grain. And probably had they told their nearest and dearest, they would have been told, get back into your box now and don't be mentioning that here again. So they opened up their hearts and they trusted him. And I think that he respected that. And, you know, when I'm looking at the research and speaking to his producers and stuff, you know, they would always say that from, he went on live at 9 o'clock, just after the 9 o'clock news. And really from about 8 o'clock in the morning, nobody went near him in the studio. He was just rehearsing. So the letters that he read out were rehearsed letters. And he kind of got the intonation right. He knew that if somebody had sent a letter to him, which was very raw and honest, that he gave the letter itself justice by rehearsing it before he went on air. He wasn't just reading it off the cuff. And I think that's that all of the little bits of culminate in the trust that you're talking about.
And he didn't always necessarily provide answers. He didn't always necessarily provide the sage advice that was going to address the question. But perhaps the most important thing he did, as you've just said, was he listened and he believed. And maybe the believed is the most important thing of all, that when people felt, they say a problem shared is a problem halved. Well, I mean, you know, Gay Byrne shared thousands, tens of thousands of problems over the years on that. And even if he didn't have the answers, he had that sort of calming presence and that calming sense to the person that you have been heard, you are not alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the times, you know, when you're listening to back to the radio programme, and I tried to include a bit of it in the book as far as I could, but he would say to the listeners, he would say, I want you to stop whatever it is you're doing. Sit down and listen to this. This needs your full attention. And at the end of the letter, he might just say that he might say nothing, or he might just say that now that will stay with you for the rest of the day. And I think that in that sense, his voice wasn't required. He recognised that the people, it was all in their words and their letters. And later on, as things got, there was lots of letters about marriage, about affairs, about all of this stuff that went on. And then he brought Maureen Gaffney in to give advice, because he wasn't, as you say, he wasn't trying to give advice. He was reading out people's, but he wasn't in their situation. Although for a lot of the Catholic stuff and a lot of the church stuff, he was a product of that environment as well. He wasn't like he'd been shipped in. He knew the harshness of the Catholic Church. He knew he'd been in a Christian Brothers school. He knew that the chances were that people were telling the truth, because he'd seen it himself in a lot of things.
And,
which made it a bit easier.
Yeah, and that sense, I'm sure there was times when he was reading out letters and maybe he mightn't it mightn't necessarily have tallied with his own personal beliefs, mightn't necessarily have been what he would choose from his own ethical standpoint or viewpoint. But he also had that openness to appreciate that, you know, other people may have had different views to him, and they were their views and they were entitled to them.
Absolutely. And I think, he would have always said he was a broadcaster, and it wasn't about him. It was always about the listener and always about them. And, you know, the listenership figures and the response to all of these various letters and discussions, he knew that that's what people wanted. And I think the in the book, the homosexuality chapter is quite telling of that, because you have people writing in with all the different perspectives. You have gay men, predominantly, weirdly, although most of the letters within the archives are actually from women within the homosexuality realm. A lot of the letters were from men, gay men, some men that didn't that knew they were gay, but knew they were destined to a life of loneliness and solitude because they could never be what they wanted to be. Then you had people who were vehemently against homosexuality, and you had mothers writing in to say, my son or my daughter came to us a couple of weeks ago with something to tell us, and we thought the world was ending, and she just told us that she was a lesbian or he was a gay, and this was the best news ever, because they had thought the worst. And these people, you can see in their torturous letters that they dreaded the day of telling their parents. And actually, for those of them that did, the parents, well, not always, to be honest, not always, but some parents absolutely threw their arms around them, and the relationships flourished from there, because there was always something in the background. So that chapter for me was a great one in that seeing the different perspectives of different people coming through in letters, and how you just let it flow, let the people talk.
The book contains many, many of the letters, but I mean, only a tiny, tiny proportion of all the letters I'm sure you went through. What were your criteria for picking them, and how difficult was it to put some letters to one side and not use them because you didn't have the space?
Very difficult in short, but what I did was, as I said earlier on the programme, there's thousands of letters. And so initially I was very, very overwhelmed and had to kind of step away from it for a while, and came back to it. That okay, no, what? So my criteria, my fundamental criteria was, except for the Northern Ireland chapter, All of the other chapters, the letters had to be my story. So this happened to me or my family, because there were so many letters that were opinions or telling stories about something that they'd heard or something, or reactions to things. So by just eliminating any letters of that nature, it just became about everyone's personal, whoever wrote their own personal story. And that was the fundamental criteria. And then because unfortunately a lot of the letters had the same story, same heartbreak, same cruelty, then it was really just a case of taking the different stories themselves and say, okay, well, that letter is kind of the same as the next one, so let's just choose one of those two, so that we could then, you know, like even in, so for example, in say the marriage chapter, there's people who had affairs, there were people who had unconsummated marriages, there were people who were having an affair, as in they were the person having an affair with a married man. There were some married men wrote in, some people who had separated and regretted. So we were just to try and get the balance of all the letters. It was not easy. It took a year longer than I thought it would. I thought we would be publishing this book this time last year, but I just wasn't ready. There was too much in it.
But you needed to be happy with the final product, and you needed to be happy that what you were presenting was an accurate reflection of.
Yes, well, that's it. And I kind of felt that I was only going to do this once. And although there was a little bit of pressure to get it done for last year, I really felt that it would be, if we do it once and we do it properly and spend another bit more time making sure that when we look back on each chapter, that there isn't anything really left out, that it's a curated collection of what's in there. And it really reflects what's in the archives as much as it possibly could.
The show ran from 1973 to 1998, 2 hours a day, with upwards of 850,000 people listening every day. Now, when you bear in mind that the population of the country for much of that time was less than 4 million, 850,000 was pretty much, 20% plus of the entire population.
Yes, incredible. And a higher percentage, given that that the percentage of the listenership was women. So if 50% of the population was women, an even higher percentage of it's probably 30-40% of women listening in every day. So the influence was massive. And the influence, I think what's very apparent as you go through the book was that the people in the far reaches of the country were listening to each other and realizing that actually the problems that they had or the things that were going on in their lives were going on all over the country. And that, I think, was the strength of those letters, and the beautiful handwriting and beautiful way people, what overwhelmed me more than anything was the way that people could write their life and their issues in such a beautiful way without any emails, without any editing, and foolscap pages or those lots of letters and those little ring binder with the wire, the notebooks with wires. And they just grabbed paper and wrote down from the heart and wrote their story and posted it off. And I think that from researching and listening again to audio, that was such a lifeline to people in the far corners of the country who thought they were living this life alone, and they weren't.
Dear Gay, A Handwritten History of Ireland, compiled by Susie Byrne. Susie, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much indeed.
Thanks
for speaking to us.
That's Thank Susie you very Byrne much. Happy there. Christmas to you all.
And happy Christmas
Thank
to
you.
Yours as well. That's Susie
Bye-bye.
There, the daughter of the wonderful Gay Byrne, and the book Dear Gay, A Handwritten History of Ireland. Caller just asking, is there late night shopping in Letterkenny tonight? I'm sure some of them will be, at least. If you have anything you can add to that, please let us know. I want to mention John McLaughlin, the CEO of Donegal County Council, is going to join us in studio after 11. If you have any questions about Donegal County Council's budget, which was passed last week, call us on 0749125000 or text us, WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. And just a notification, there's been an oil spill on the outside lane of the dual carriageway outside Letterkenny. Now, given that we've already reported oil spills at Balnalecki near Rafoe and at the Optum roundabout, I wonder, could they all be linked? It is certainly a possibility. So really, if you're travelling from Rafoe toward Letterkenny, please do take care, because there could be oil on that road. Now, Dr. Mary Hainsworth is the service manager with Donegal Domestic Violence, and she joins us on the line. Dr. Mary, good morning.
Morning, Donal. How are you doing?
Very well indeed. The Donegal Domestic Violence Service is launching its Safe at Home campaign, and we know that sadly Christmas time can be a time of heightened emotions. It can be a time when, for many, it's anything but the season of goodwill.
It is indeed, yeah. And we do sometimes do a Christmas, like a Christmas toy appeal, and, you know, the focus is on Christmas and buying presents for children. But I think this year we've been hit by the reality that for a lot of children and young people, you know, one of the best presents you can give them is actually that kind of freedom from the fear and intimidation that's often got when, you know, they're either experiencing domestic violence or there's an extreme alcohol use within the house. And oftentimes the two combined together can cause quite a stressful time for young people. So we're advertising and putting out there a campaign to raise funds for ourselves, but it's to support clients to make sure that their homes have maybe additional safety and security measures. So we are trying to encourage families to stay in the home, not with an abuser, but if they've moved out, to either make their new home safe with security cameras, maybe they need a panic alarm, or if they're staying in the family home and think that things might escalate, that we're looking at additional security measures there. So it's all about trying to get the message across that maybe the best present we can give children this year, particularly those living with domestic abuse, is to live in a household that's free of that violence. We know the calls to Childline will go through the roof over Christmas, and most of those calls are domestic violence related or addiction issues.
I heard a comment recently, actually, I was quite taken by, someone said that the essence of Christmas is it makes what's good better and it makes what's bad worse.
It can do, yeah. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, Christmas can be quite a stressful time of the year. So what we're trying to do is, you know, put message across. It's not about having to buy loads of presents and, you know, think that that's the kind of the go-to symbol of a good Christmas. It is about all the other things, you know, it's the smaller things that matter. And I think, you know, that message of originally Christmas was about peace and goodwill, but that emphasis on peace, particularly at this time of the year, and certainly given what's happening globally, I think should be a key message for Christmas this year. And that's what we're putting at the heart of the campaign, you know, try and get kids to have some peace this Christmas.
If people want to get in touch with you over the coming weeks, how can they do so?
Well, we have a helpline number there. It's 1800 262 677, and we do support families to move. So, you know, just because it's the run up to Christmas and you think the services will be slowing down or not available, we are 24 hours and we will continue to be 24 hours completely over the Christmas period. So give us a call if you need any support or assistance. And that can be about moving. It can be about looking for support around child access. It can be looking at legal support or court accompaniment. Any of those services are available.
And if people want to organise a fundraising event for you, which I'm sure will be very much appreciated, particularly at this time, they can make contact with you and arrange that as well.
They can, and they can also use our website, DonegalDomesticViolenceServices.ie, and there is a button at the top there. There's one to donate, but next to that, there's one if you want to fundraise, and it will actually, it helps to set up a page that you can then use to get direct people to send money to, so you don't have to handle anything. It can all be set up on that page. So it's actually really easy to do if anybody wants, you know, people are back home for Christmas, maybe want something to do between Christmas and New Year. It's a great opportunity.
And one of the things you're trying to do as part of the campaign is to provide equipment such as security cameras, panic alarms where appropriate, also provide supervised access for children where needed over the holiday period. So you're trying to provide what you can to try and make things as good as possible for some of the people you're dealing with.
Absolutely. You know, we just want people to be able to have a good time, feel safe, you know, and feel that, you know, there are additional supports and measures that are available there. And, you know, to contact the service if you want to access any of those. But that is our message. Let's try and make Christmas safe. You know, let's that have that as the focus for this year.
Dr. Murray Hainsworth, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. We wish you and those involved with the service all the best over Christmas. Hopefully you won't be too busy, and hopefully it's as good a Christmas as it can be for those who use your services.
Absolutely. Thank you, Donal, and the same to yourself and all the staff at Highland.
Thank you very much indeed. And that's Dr. Mary Hainsworth there. And a very, very important campaign. That's the Donegal Domestic Violence Safe at Home campaign. They're doing what they can to make Christmas as safe as possible. And anything we can do to help, I'm sure, would be much appreciated and very important.